Welcome to this week's episode of the First Moves podcast. We're speaking to Yannick Dulce, business developer at the Brightland Smart Services Campus here in Limburg, and we'll be talking to him about how he builds bridges between technology and people by using narrative. If you want to learn about how Yannick is contributing to a really fast-growing and up-and-coming ecosystem here in Limburg, make sure you listen to this episode. It's filled with insights and a lot of cool stories. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Yannick, welcome to the First Moves podcast. Could you maybe introduce yourself a bit and your career journey so far?
Yes, of course. My name is Yannick Dulce. My career story, okay, let's start just from after graduation. I studied industrial engineering and management. And after that, I immediately started my own company together with two co-founders. We started an HR company that did basically recruitment for engineers in the first phase of their studies. So either while studying or with the first or the second step on the labor market. We did this mainly focused in high tech, in the chemical industry and in ICT. So we had offices on the high tech campus, on the Camelot campus, and our office first in Geleen, but later on in Ermond. And it was a very traditional business. I never heard of startups or whatsoever. And it was quite an adventure because if we look back, that was 2012. In this region, there was not so much going on to support young entrepreneurs. So you all had to figure it out. So on the one hand, you saw a lot of more of the youngsters got very interested in what is entrepreneurship is about. And so we started to create bottom-up communities around it to basically support that. And then I also learned about startups, and that intrigued me because what you see there is like a different way of finding new business models and changing things in the world that you want to see differently, and that really appealed to me. And then I was a coach at Startup Weekend Eindhoven on the high-tech campus. And then I was like, this is a great format. We need to bring this also to Limburg. Because, yeah, it was not organized there. So you can think about why it's not there. Or you go to Google, knock on their door and say, hey, give me the license. We're going to organize it here. So we did that. We arranged a big group out of the community that we created here to basically organize it. We got a lot of nice partners. From the municipality of Maastricht to, for instance, Zuid, where we were able to use the location here in Maastricht. So we organized, started Week at Maastricht. Got coaches from Silicon Valley, from Shanghai, really focused on get people there, not only consultants, mostly people been there, done that. Because advising as a consultant, it's nice on your own topic, but for entrepreneurship, you need to have somebody that really has been going through it. And so we did that, was super successful. We got more than 35% international people attending this, really embracing the Euregio. And Brightland was one of the partners at the time. So this was 2015. And in the meantime, they were developing the innovation hub for Brightlands at the time. They're going to develop that in 2016. It was called the Brightlands Innovation Factory. And then they came to me and they said, yeah, we also need a young person with a lot of energy who basically is already developing what we want to do on a bigger scale. And they asked me, do you want to help? So I had to think, of course, because, yeah, I have my own company. But, yeah, it was really something in line with what drives me. So I said, okay, for 2 years, I'm willing to help and develop. And that was a great, great journey. I was able to, in the beginning part, to develop a lot around community management. Then, okay, we're going to do the programs, so I needed to develop an incubation program, a new acceleration program with the team, and we focused on that. And then you probably also need to get the startups. And a lot of them are coming outside of this region and get them here. So also really involved in the deal flow management. It was a really great journey. I think at the time we accomplished a lot, really making an impact about, let's say, creating the foundation of the startup community that we know nowadays in this province. And that also led that another passion of mine came across, which basically was like a hobby to me, and that was blockchain. And nothing about speculation and crypto, no, I was intrigued by the technology. Because I saw, like, if you look to some challenges we have in the world, it's like a certain building block that we can basically use to bring society better together. There are some other applications, like we can create a whole podcast around that topic. But we were also able to set up the first Dutch blockchain incubator. And I think that was a very successful one. They always had a lot of startups from around the world trying to tackle real-world problems. So that was great. But yeah, there comes a time, these 2 year ends. And at that time, I knew, okay, I still had the HR company. But I had too much seen of, one, the startup world about real making impact with innovation. So I was very happy at that time to be invited around the world, mostly Europe, to speak on bigger conferences regarding blockchain with the intersection of technology. And there, yeah, you come across a lot of interesting projects. Of course, a lot of startups that want your advice on the one hand and your support. But on the other hand, you had did a lot of consultancy also for Fortune 500 companies, even a country with minister president, six ministers, to really reshape their organization. But what you also saw is the lack of follow-up afterwards, because there was not enough, let's say, talent to also build these technologies. And that's why when I was invited on the Ukrainian Blockchain Day in 2017, I saw a big opportunity there. What you saw there, it was a country that just got their independence at the time in 1991, really in focusing a lot on their IT infrastructure, where they got from the Soviet times, they got a very good mathematical background. So the quality was really good. Their English was not always the best, but that's something they can learn. So what we did there is basically building development teams to really make also it possible to develop these technologies. And then to fast forward a little bit, then of course you get Corona, which for me as an entrepreneur was a hard period. Because you do international work and then you're not able to step into a plane, travel, all your events, which are normally on stage, are canceled. But also organizations see, okay, we need to cut down because it's an unknown period. So innovation is one of the first to basically cut down. Of course, you keep hope. I think you learn a lot during these periods about yourself. And then later on, of course, it opened up. It started and then it closes down, you know. So I came a little bit more back also home. Then also Brightlands came again to me. In this case, the Brightlands Smart Services Campus, where we really focus on the development of human AI, human-centric AI. They want to give the startup activity a new impulse, and they ask me. So I started part-time because I still had also business to do, especially in Kiev, Ukraine. But yeah, then the war comes. And in the beginning, you think, okay, we can still continue this. But later on, I also stopped that activity. because yeah, you cannot go there easily. You cannot stay in touch with your employees. Your employees are in a different. So I made sure that they landed well. And from then on, fully focused within Brightlands on startup activity on the one hand. On the other hand, I'm also part of some innovation projects where I would also love to tell you a little bit more about later.
I'm sure we'll go more into that later, but I'm curious because you went through many, many years in a short period of time, and I think you also skipped over many, many projects that you were involved in naturally.
Definitely.
But I'm curious how you take such a wide variety of experience as someone who's had skin in the game and now take that forward into your role as the business developer of Startups and Scale-Ups at the Brightlands, it's always a mouthful, Smart Services Campus.
I think where my power lies is I'm very passionately curious, especially when it goes about new technologies. On the other hand, I'm able, and that's where I think my power lies, to build the bridge between technology, like engineers, and management. And I think there is where you see in a lot of IT projects, if we talk about that fail, is that there is no understanding between the management and the engineers, the technology. And if you can build that bridge, you're able to do a successful implementation. Of course, you need frameworks, but you need to be able to talk to each other. And as an industrial engineer, which management is mainly focused on business, but you're still an engineer, you're able to talk to both. And I think that's where you build the bridge, and also is in my personality to bring people together. To understand each other. You don't have to agree, but understand where an emotion, where an action comes from. I think that is in all, like, very important.
I'm wondering now, because I think these kinds of conflicts that you have when you're trying to bring ideas and people or technologies and people together, it's a very common theme. Like, resistance to these kinds of things is something that you find always. So what kind of obstacles do you find in building these bridges, and how do you try to overcome them?
Yeah, I think there's several layers that we can look at. And change management, we can also host a whole podcast around that one. But it's a very interesting topic, because what you have to understand is what are the powers at play, especially with bigger organizations. You can talk to middle management, and they would love to be helped with the technology. And yes, they can create the business case and whatsoever. But if management on top of that is not the fan and is blocking it, you will not get it implemented. You will not get budget. You're basically set up to fail. But the other way around, it's also the same. If management comes and it is their solo innovation, a thing to implement something, and they forget they also have people working with it that need to accept it, yeah, then we can get throw a lot of money at the technology. But if nobody adopts it, that's how. So I always think the sweet spot is you need to have bottom up and top down. You need to have both these buy-ins, and you need to create awareness why. Understand how certain layers within an organization look at it. Why are they resistant? They are resistant for a reason. They are afraid for their job. They are afraid somebody else get more power, or their own career is at risk. There is always a way. So being able to understand the different perspectives and creating like a common goal, something that everybody can get across with, yeah, I think that's very important in these projects. It's not only technology. No. Adoption, I think, is much more important than acceptance of the technology than that.
Yes. So a big part of this is also then having the right people in the company, right? So that you could do these top-down, bottom-down, bottom-down. So you can get these right teams together. But how do you go about finding the right people? Because you've done this multiple times now with your own HR company, but also helping now startups. How do you really find the people that will stick with it and kind of understand? You don't have to agree, as you said, but just understand the end goal.
Oh, this is also a very interesting topic. I think finding the right people is really, really important. And a bad hire is so expensive for a company. So yeah, take your time hiring somebody. Don't hire them just because we need somebody ASAP. But also understand your team dynamic. You have all different kinds of tests like MBTI or DISC or whatsoever to understand somebody's personality. And I can tell one story about myself to where I came to the understanding about different personalities. Doesn't mean that if you are in my allergy zone, no, I actually like you more than I would love to see. And because I started the company with two co-founders. And I can tell you in the beginning when you set up a company, it's hard. You cannot take a salary out. So you're basically spending a lot of time there and grinding and investing for your future, planting the seeds, etc. And after a while, I saw especially one of these co-founders like drifting away. Like I didn't feel the passion anymore that he had before. And what you also saw is that he was a little bit in my allergy. So to give you an idea, if you look to DISC, you have the yellow, somebody that is very enthusiastic, and great new ideas, getting people all together, et cetera, et cetera. And he was very blue, structured, putting everything in place, following up deadlines, et cetera, et cetera. And he was really, really, that was in my eye. I don't never wanted to do that. I just want to be free and out and about. So we had some friction, of course. I think it's also because of the things that are happening. And later on, we had a sit down, and these two co-founders, they left the company, and I continued on my own. And then, in the first phase, there I learned, oh, I miss this blue energy. I miss this structure, because I can make structure for other people, but for myself, I really had to learn that. And this was still in the early phase of my career. Still struggle sometimes with this, but... and there the first person I hired was blue as it can be, and that was so refreshing. So there you also see it's like perspective. They do things so differently, so you can either shy away, and I think that's the same within a company. And of course, yeah, a lot of people focus too much on a CV, where a CV is just, yeah, it shows you what they have done. So you can take off some risks, but in the end, if you especially look to innovation projects, you're going to do stuff nobody did before. It's nice that they have some experience in certain fields, so they know the mechanics. And then it's better to have somebody that is really eager and passionately curious than somebody that has so much experience. So,
as a startup, how would you implement the DISC framework kind of to find the right hires? Just very simply.
Oh, very simply. Now, to give you one idea, I think this is maybe you have some a great website online, 16 personalities, where you can do an MBTI test. Ask them before an interview to fill that in, and if they are willing to share, of course, up to the applicant. That gives you a lot of insight about how do they function. And I can tell you, if your team has too much red, for instance, you're going to have trouble. So then look into your team. What do we need to balance that out? Of course, you need to have the right skill set. You can give him an assignment for it to show. And not about, does he do it well, right? Ask him about the reasoning behind it, because that I find more important. And combine that with, does his personality fit into a gap that we have currently in the team? Especially for a startup, you're sitting so close upon each other. Your responsibilities are big. They're also not set, because one day you need to do sales, the other day you're doing probably development or whatsoever. So you need to find people that are also flexible and that can deal with that. It's not for everybody, I can tell you that.
And how do you deal with those individual differences? Because, as you said, when you got the blue hire again, you felt the sense of relief.
Yeah.
But I'm like it's something that also in my work, I also work in change management. And so a lot of the things that you're saying, they're ringing bells in my head. But how can you kind of create the alignment in an organization where it makes sense to have these different kinds of people and that people don't feel resistant to it as like a knee-jerk reaction, but they see the value in it?
I think your question layers in different, there's different questions in this one question. When you look at hiring and adding people to your team, I think still it's hard to know upfront, are they going to fit? And then on the other hand, are they going to accept changes that you bring? Because that is the second layer that you want to implement. That is just about how are you creating the narrative? How are you creating the story about why we are doing this? On the one hand, on the other hand, I see it now, for instance, look to bigger governmental organizations that I also currently work. You see is that even though they know we need to embrace AI, they also know how hard it is to implement an IT system into government. So what do you do? You're going to focus on technology and efficiency that it can bring and a necessity? No, you start with the people and start with getting their knowledge about the technology, because there's still a lot of resistance around it, create it to a level of awareness, set up awareness workshops where on the one hand, they can know a little bit more about it, especially also let them be involved in the solution. So listen to them, let them have ideas, and then it also becomes part of their ID instead that from high up, you're going to tell, okay, we're going to do X, Y, Z. Yeah. So create that buy-in.
I think also you started touching upon something that I'm starting to realize more and more, and it's especially I could imagine in technology innovation, you're coming with your argumentation probably from very rational angles of this is how this technology solves this problem. It wins X amount of efficiency. It does this for us. It speeds up the process. Those are very rational arguments, but the buy-in is emotional.
Yeah.
Right. So how do you make sure that that clicks?
That's a very good question. How do you create a bridge between the rationale and the emotion? So it also depends on who you're talking. Some people resonate much better with rationale. Look to engineers. And then you have the people managers, and it's all about how it affects their team emotionally. But why not build a bridge where both are aligned? And then again, you come back and we circle back, and maybe I repeat myself, but in the end, it's about the narrative that you bring to them. Create buy-in. Make sure it's their also ID. Where, of course, having like a leader on top of them who enables them to also have resources to put to this and be part of the solution instead of be handed the solution. I think that really helps.
Yeah. And maybe now I want to dive a bit more into your work and how you take these lessons into your work day to day. So what does your work look like at Brightlands? What kind of startups do you help? How do you help them, etc.?
So when I look to my job, every day is different. Together with all the four the Brightlands campuses, we collaborate with our startup activity together with the University of Maastricht. And LEOF, which is our regional development bank, under the umbrella of the Brightlands Startup League. I think there is that when you look to Limburg, you see that we have a lot of hidden gems. We have a lot of expertise. And what is very important for a startup is to get connected to the ecosystem. So what we do here, there is creating events, bringing them together, linking them, to be able to excel, to get in front of a launching customer, to get in contact with a development partner, to be able to get the first investment. Combine that with masterclasses and workshops that everybody in the region can freely attend. I think it's a big step forward that we finally are within Limburg, creating a place where you can go to and be helped on the startup activities. In the meantime, you also have the Brightlands Startup Challenge, where students are, if they have an idea, they can participate. They get also masterclass and workshop. You see, most of the times from an ideation perspective, still when you look to the technology readiness level and low, so they're not ready for one of the campuses, for instance. They're also still students. And that opened up now not only to the UM, but also basically any local educational partner can bring their teams. They can freely participate. And most of them, they will never start the venture. And this is fine. Because what I think, something that was in 2012 not there, this is finally like a safety net for entrepreneurial students, young entrepreneurs to be able to train their entrepreneurial muscles. And even though they're not starting ever a venture, they will take this to the workforce. I also hope that when you look, especially to the students of University of Maastricht, is that the international students that come there, that they also get in touch with the local ecosystem, with the partners there, so that we are also able to retain more of this talent that stay into the region. And on top of that, you have a follow-up after that. It's called the Milestones Program at UM. And then we hope they get more mature. And then if they are within the fields of Brightlands, so we have in Maastricht, we have the Brightlands Maastricht Health Campus, focused on precision medicine, regenerative medicine, innovative diagnostic. We have on Camelot a focus on smart materials, on sustainable manufacturing. We have in the Greenport campus, Venlo, they're focused on the future of farming, logistics of farming, and then ourselves focus on human-centric AI and data science. So if they are mature enough, they can land there. And if not, they hopefully can land somewhere else in the region. And I think that's a good step forward. So supporting that. Then, of course, we have an ecosystem where we have like 150 plus partners that we collaborate with on our campus, where around 60 are situated on our campus. And there we do all kinds of great stuff. And it's that ranges from, when you look to our region, had to reinvent themselves. To look back, we had the coal mines till the 70s, most prosperous region, and then from one day or another they get closed. And now you look, for instance, in Parkstad, they're number one in something you don't want to be number one in, and that's poverty and debt. And I think in the meantime we are reinventing ourselves, we're getting better. And around poverty and debt, we saw, you can see that as a problem, but we see it also as an opportunity, because we have now with a big consortium an ELSA lab. ELSA has a very important principle for us. It's the ethical, legal, societal aspects of AI. And in the ELSA lab, we focus on poverty and debt. So how can you prevent people from getting into poverty and debt? But also when they are in this, how can you support them so they get much quicker out of it? Because when you look about poverty and debt and the cost for our society, it's a lot. It's big. And so it's good. For instance, we as a campus created with partners a big consortium that goes from economic affairs to the Ministry of Internal Affairs, but also Belastingdienst, DUO, all these big institutes that are involved a lot of times when people are in debt, to really look, okay, how can we research where the human is puts centric, privacy is guaranteed, ethical reasons are covered, to help them. On the other hand, also part of my job is to we set up and we're doing now the first pilot, a focus really on AI for innovative SMEs. If you look economically wise, is that SMEs are basically the economical engine for our region, but basically for the whole of the Netherlands. Revenue, I think more than 80% comes from SMEs. What SMEs also have is that a lot of times they don't look to themselves as very innovative. A lot of time they're working a lot in their business and they don't have like big corporations like data engineers, developers or whatsoever. They don't have an innovation manager or to really look into, and they're really focusing on what they're currently doing. But on the other hand, some of them, they are aware that, oh, this AI comes across and this gives me opportunities, but they don't have basically the safety net to really experiment and to look, okay, what can it mean for me? So we started something new. It's called the Innovation Powerhouse, where what we do there is really add that team to the SME, to go to an SME, and in favorable, you go to three SMEs in the same space. So you can find an AI solution by looking into their company that is happening, that is a problem or can create a solution for all three. So you get a scalable solution, go towards a rapid prototype that you can also test. Is this what we saw working? And then together with ecosystem partners, develop this into a solution that you then can scale and implement in much more SMEs in Limburg to really create and make the SMEs future-proof.
Cool. So this links a little bit to what we had a guest last week saying on the podcast with when startups come to them, they are very much thinking inside the box of this is what we want to do and this is how we're doing it. So their job is like your job, but we're talking about Predak that also works with the Brightland Startup League. And his job was then saying that he needs to get to inspire the startups to get them thinking outside the box. How do you do that with the SMEs? Because if they're very focused on what they're doing right now, how do you get them to implement the AI at some point?
I think it's very important that the entrepreneur needs to embrace and is open for it. So that's why we also focus on innovative SMEs, is because there is also a lot of SMEs, and let them be, they do what they do. But some really want, and if you want this, and again, here comes again also the struggle, is it doesn't need to be a one-man show from the entrepreneur. And that's why also we go inside, we also talk to their employees and also get the buy-in from another level. So no, yeah, you need to, the entrepreneur needs to embrace it. Otherwise, it doesn't work. And then you also need to find the adoption from the employees.
You're very much focused with your work with all those different angles. You're essentially shooting at the same problem, as far as I understand it, which is simply ecosystem building and strengthening the region. What do you think are the biggest opportunities and like the next steps in Limburg to start realizing this more and more and more?
I think with the implementation of Brightlands, which got partially initiated by, of course, the province, I think they did a good step forward to put Limburg on the map. Also, when you look to some researchers, you see that the innovation is growing. I'm very happy to see that within our own company, we're now focusing more on SMEs, because I think it's an essential part for the ecosystem, but also for the embedding into the local ecosystem. Yeah, on top of that, I think we have some challenges when I look to startups to have more access to capital. And I think the access is there, but make it easier to get access to it, because when you have a good idea, the money is there. That's a given. But I mean, very early stage, the pizza money, as we sometimes call it in the startup world, I think there we can make a step. On the other hand, collaboration is key. I think when you look to the Limburgish culture, where with the verenigingen of the lokale fanfare and the football teams, and you see that is wired in our DNA, and I think we're not yet using that to our full potential. One thing, but this is something a little bit personal. I always am amazed that you have in southern Limburg, you have Sittard Geleen, you have Heerlen, you have Maastricht. All the centers are 20 minutes apart. Yeah. But when you look to the amount of municipalities that we have, it's 17. When I was living in Kiev and I had an appointment in the city center, I was 30 to 45 minutes traveling to get from one appointment to the other. And I'm still in the city center. So sometimes I have a dream that, let's say, Zuid-Limburg would become one municipality. I also know it will probably not happen when I'm alive. But yeah, it doesn't matter that it needs to be one. I think collaboration, and I see this much, much more happening. It's also something that happens over time, creating trust, etc. I think a great example is the Brighton Startup League, where now all four campuses, together with UM and Leof, are really working together, and that's a big step up.
I think one thing, though, is maybe not a point of criticism, but a more critical question, is a lot of places, they try to start to position themselves as innovation hotspots. Because it sounds very cool and sexy, and we have the potential to do big things. But in reality, what do you think sets Limburg apart as something that has a lot of potential?
Let me then focus on Brightlands, because I think that is the symbol for innovative Limburg. I think, for instance, let's first start with our own campus. I think every region has somewhere an AI focus. But what makes Brightlands as a whole, combined with our campus, so interesting is the positioning of infrastructure and focus on the Camelot campus, for instance. They have certain infrastructure. When you want to set up a certain plant, a pilot plant or whatsoever, there's not so many places in the world where you can do that. It's for sure that you have Japanese and all these research centers setting up shop there. It's unique. Combine that with now the circular space that they are developing. And then on top of that, then I link it to our campus. What do you need in all of that to also stay ahead of the curve? Yeah, you need to use data. Yeah, you need to need AI to take the fullest of the innovation in your sector. Then let's go to the University of Maastricht, but also Brightlands Maastricht Health Campus and Academic Hospital. It's also very unique. They have a very unique focus. What do they do there? They're mainly focused on valorizing what comes out of research in the Academic Hospital, the UM, and bringing that to the market. I think it's very important to bring technologies to the market, because a lot of them never end up in society and they don't make the impact. They do that there. One of the examples, Mozambique. Okay, they're still, you cannot buy their burger yet, but the research is a very important one. So there's where you see, yeah, that also happened there for a reason. So I think, and there you see again, the link with us is more that data is everywhere. On top of that, for our own campus, you also see that by closing the mines, we got like new organizations to focus at that created the new jobs. For us, that was the Central Bureau of Statistics, there was APG and the pension fund, that was the Belastingdienst. I think in the beginning it was really hard because somebody that worked in the mines, working in that type of organization, so you needed to develop that. And that's why we also, that is now coming, developing much further, hence also our campus. And there you see now also that we have a very strong focus on public services, because we collaborated a lot with them and learned a lot. Working also now, we do a lot of national projects where we look about, okay, how can the market and governments better collaborate? To also, how can we create more awareness and acceptance for AI and data science, and do a lot of projects there to really help the public servants to excel.
Mm. Yeah. So it's really what makes it unique is this very broad and interdisciplinary constellation of different inputs. Yeah. And of course, those overlaps can breed very interesting innovations. And then you have the bridge to relay to people through business, but also the government.
Yeah.
I think it's a very fair argument.
So we talked a lot about ecosystem building, and ecosystem building usually takes a long time for the results to bear fruit. Do you ever personally feel that you get like under pressure for short-term deliverables in the ecosystems personally?
Oh, very good question. Yes. What you see is that there are different, let's say, powers at play. To just give you one example, we have three different types of organizations: education, government, and business. And you're trying to bring them together and collaborate. And yes, I think it's very important to do it in that way, to bring them together and to create also something together. But they all have very different end games. And there it becomes very important to make sure that you can get a shared end game. And of course, this one has more focus on this, but there needs to be an overlap that you hands out where everybody is happy with, because then you can create that as the goal, that the step on the horizon where you're working towards. And that's sometimes challenging. Yeah, definitely. That's challenging because every 4 years there are new elections. That's challenging because then you arranged everything and a new person is stepped into that position. That's challenging because of geopolitical or economy trends. The strategy of an organization changes. Because it sometimes takes a lot of time to build this. Nevertheless, it's the only foundation about how you can collaborate. So keep that in mind, and the rest is hurdles along the line that you have to challenge.
Yeah. So we talked about change management as well, and that's already difficult sometimes to do within an organization. But this is pretty much change management inter-organizational level. How do you do that? How do you get 3-4 different organizations to get to the same table and look for the same goal in the end, or understand each other in a way that they can reach that goal together?
Just be open. I think when I look at myself, is that my ambition is to create an impact in this region, create an impact in the world, and to create positive change. So I think that resonates with a lot of people. And if you come from that perspective and try to really understand that other person and not really force your opinion upon them. And again, when we come to what we earlier said, then you can find this common goal. Or yeah, it's also a lot of relationship building that you invest in along the time. So this gets you to that point where, yeah, when you say something, people listen, which is never a given.
Absolutely. And I think it speaks again to the power of narrative.
Yeah, that's definitely. It's all about story.
I think before we start closing off, I do want to pick your brain about narrative and story.
Okay.
If that's okay.
Sure.
I'm wondering, how do you start to craft those stories, and how do you tell them to people so that they buy in?
I think it's maybe I can give you a short and a very long answer. The short answer is I always do a lot on intuition and feeling. So from there on, I have like stayed true to yourself in the story, in the narrative. So don't manipulate it, because people feel when you're trying to manipulate them or whatsoever. Or when you're telling something that's not genuine to yourself, maybe it's not manipulation. And I think there, it's just finding the common things in there. And yeah, I think it's very different about certain topics or this thing in your narrative creation, trying to understand the other person. So this, yeah. It sounds strange. I don't have like a framework that I use. I listen. How does it make me feel, and where can I connect it to the things that I'm working on or the things they are working on, and create like this win-win-win probability. And I think when you are able to do that very efficiently, because a lot of times you have to also be in that moment. Because opportunities arise during a conversation. It's not that I have the hour before like time. Oh, I have to craft a narrative. No, that's not how it goes. A lot goes on the fly. So I think that's something I want to answer on that question.
Very fair. And I think it speaks as well where you started off talking about inside an organization, leveling the different perspectives, understanding what they want, what they see, what they're scared of. And then you can craft from there. Yeah. Not even craft, but you know how to react.
Yeah.
So we talked about your really impressive career with everything you've been doing throughout it. Looking back, what is the proudest achievement you've had so far in your career?
I have to pick one.
You can pick multiple as well.
Nah. Let me pick one. I think like... I come like in my career, I had like one point of realization, like I'm just this boy from Sittard, and I'm now traveling around the world, and I'm standing now in an Olympic stadium talking to 5,000 people that are all listening to me, really absorbing the things that I'm sharing. And I think that's one of my proudest moments, because yeah, I never thought that I would do that on such a young age. And as I told before, I have a lot of yellow energy. So yeah, it's something that I like to do. That on the one hand is something I'm really proud of. Yeah.
And then with that broad-ranging experience and the work you do now, what is kind of one thing that you think you see is often missing with entrepreneurs and leaders when they're trying to foster innovation and build things?
Validation. I think I see too many startups, entrepreneurs that have their idea of what a solution should look like, but they never talk to a customer. They never test it. They are afraid to call. And I think being rejected is something that you have to learn as an entrepreneur. It's really part of it. It also shows, do you really have the skin in the game? Are you able to be rejected, find a small tweak and go again, but have this customer feedback? This customer development, I think, is a very, let's say, underestimated part of a startup development. Of even a normal business development. If you do not know your customer, if you do not know what he thinks about it, if you don't have a buy-in from him, then you can develop the greatest solution with all these features that does the best thing in the world. But if nobody wants to use it, for who did you make it? And also, the earlier you test it, the less you lose in development costs, etc., the more you can use. And then on the other hand, when you then have your minimal viable product, start scaling it up, try to find more, really know and validate before you do the next feature development or whatsoever. I think that's,
yes, very
the
fair.
One I want to give away.
Yeah, I mean, it seems ridiculous to even have to say it, but I've also had my own companies and things like this, so I understand the difficulty with validating, but in the end, you're only making something usually to sell it or to serve a purpose. And if you don't even know if you're doing that, then what the hell are you doing? So, very fair point. Last question before we wrap up. What's next for Brightlands and your role inside of it, looking forward?
Scaling up really the innovation powerhouse. We're doing now pilot. Really seeing fine-tuning a framework where we can really, let's say, create impact to make innovative SMEs, local SMEs, make them thrive, to really be able to adopt AI into their organization so they become future-proof. So we also get a future-proof Limburgish economy. I think that's one of the things that is very close to me. Yeah, and on the other hand, create more awareness for the adoption of AI. You don't have to be afraid that you lose your job, but you will lose your job if you do not adopt AI. I think that summarizes. And then we're making steps also in helping organization, either in the public services domain, in the SME domain, but also in the health and care, because there, of course, we also got big challenges ahead that strongly impact our society.
So we have this closing tradition on the podcast where we ask our guests to bring an item of significant value for themselves. What did you bring with you?
I couldn't pick, so I brought two things. First, I took a drone. This is just a simple film drone, but I love technology, and I also love to play around with technology. So I usually, this is not a self-built one, but I usually build my own drones. I love especially the building part. And this is also, I want you to showcase that you don't need to follow a certain education to adopt a certain technology. I learned it on YouTube how to do it, and I did that with a lot of things. Even with AI, I'm not an engineer that is educated in AI, but I'm also always passionately curious, and I think when you're passionately curious, you can learn so much and develop your technology skills online, but also any other skills, but for me it's mainly in the technology field. So that's why I took a drone. On the other hand, I took a book, it's called The Power of Now. I think something that when you're so busy running around is that you're constantly, your head is busy. And what I've learned, especially in certain phases of my entrepreneurship, is being able to get back to the here and now, to really also focus on yourself, not living in the future or dwelling on the past about things that you could have done better. That really helps you, your own personal development. And I think this book really, showcase for a lot of people to implement that. But for me, it's just also about finding that inner peace, because otherwise you're going to get burnout. Otherwise, you lose the connection with yourself. Listen to your inner body. And that's how I make a lot of decisions. So for me, it's very important to have that in a concrete base.
I think that's a very important thing also just for all entrepreneurs, actually, because I struggle with that sometimes, with being able to just pull back and not think about tomorrow or the day after or next week or the month after what's going to happen. So I'm constantly in that state of the mind just keeps on turning. And that's when you go to bed, when you wake up, it just constantly keeps on going with new ideas. How can we make it better? How can we do this? So that's definitely something I need to implement. So I might actually go read the book.
Yeah. And I mean, I meditate quite a lot. And then there's phases when I don't and phases when I do. And when I don't and I'm very busy, I feel miserable usually. And when I do, I feel amazing because I get the energy back from the work again if I do.
Yeah, and you also will know, I need to do it again.
Yeah, very quickly.
But yeah, it's also not about having this strict regimen where indeed you do it every day or whatsoever. Yeah. I think especially when you know when you need it and you balance that out. And I think that if you're already aware of it, I think you already have a good basis. Mm. And I think nowadays, especially with having a phone access where instant gratification, you're numbing your brain constantly with dopamine shots. So seeing also with a lot of, let's say, mental health issues that the younger generation currently has, I think going back, taking a step down, slow down to speed up, I think it would be very beneficial to take the full potential of yourself. So use it.
1,000%. Yeah. Preaching to the choir. All right. Yannick, thank you very much for your time
today.
Thank you guys for inviting me.
Thank you for listening to our episode. If you want to connect with our guest personally, then give us a follow on LinkedIn at First Moves. We also have an Instagram at First Moves Podcast. And lastly, we ask you to leave a review. This will enable us to bring better guests on board and give you better content in the future. Have a nice day.